Hello and welcome to the Newism podcast. The Newism's goal is deceptively simple but vast: to create a sustainable, inclusive global system where humans live within the means of the planet and all forms of life can thrive. Young people are at the heart of that future and that vision. After all, it is they who will be leading change in the future. Thankfully, many of them are already doing just that. Louis DeJay is one of them. He is an eco-entrepreneur, exploring, creating, and identifying ways in which we can harmonize humanity's relationship with nature. His focus is on natural agriculture, landscaping, renewable construction, and transportation. He has founded various organizations and campaigns to have the greatest possible positive impact. Louis, welcome to the Newism. We'd love to hear more about your work and your vision for the future.
Hi, Alexandra. Well, what a beautiful introduction about your vision on the world. I really love it.
Thank you. That's really kind. Well, we're really happy to have you here with us.
Well, I'm happy to be here too.
Thank you. And if you could maybe, before your conversation gets started with Mel, if you could maybe tell us a little more about, go into a bit more detail about your work and your vision for a better future.
Well, I think the better of a better future starts with you, with me, with every individual in this world. My work is mostly regarding renewable agriculture, ways to produce food, because food is the only thing that we really depend on as humans. Without food, we die. But the real reason why I'm doing things, the why, is that people, individuals, are able to change the world. A lot of people are passive, watching the news, worrying, have a lot of angst because they see the world in so much trouble, so much chaos, and they have the feeling, oh, there's nothing I can do about this, but this is wrong. And this is something we haven't learned on school or haven't learned anywhere, but it's a fact that every individual has the power to change the world. Everybody in his own domain. Somebody will maybe change the world just on his street, or somebody will change the world in his village. And as a matter of fact, it's the only way how the world has ever been changed by individuals for the worst or for the better. So what I always say to people is, if a girl from 15 years old with Asperger's can wake up the world, what's your excuse not to do it? And then, of course, I'm referring to Greta Thunberg.
Absolutely. Well, we couldn't agree more. And I saw Mel putting a thumbs up while you were saying that we have the power to make change. So I have a feeling he is going to agree with you, and I certainly do. So thank you so much for that introduction. And
with pleasure.
Hear more about your thoughts and your vision in your conversation to Mel and I will hand over to Mel now.
Hi, Louis. So I absolutely 100% agree with your view that we have it in our power to create change. I think one of the challenges we have in the world at the moment is that, you know, we do see the news and everything is global and everything seems to be really dark clouds, and they're enormous, and they're in numbers are in billions, and so on and so forth. But I think my view has always been, if we all do a little thing, even if it's just turning the light off,
exactly.
But if we all did it, then actually you'd make a difference. So we do have it in our power to create change. But I'd love to know a little more about your own initiative that you've done, and maybe why you started it. I'd be fascinated to know.
Yeah, well, I was standing in the desert in Morocco, and as you know, a desert, everything is dead, everything is dry. We're unable, or it's very difficult for humans to live there, to grow food, to have shelter for the extremes. And what I learned is that we humans created that desert. We created the Sahara because of malpractices. It used to be one big food forest, one big Garden of Eden. and we destroyed it. So I was really shocked by this vast amount of deadness. There are some creatures living in there, of course, but not so beneficial for humans. And the desert is expanding every day. So I said to myself, okay, if people are able to destroy, we're also able to reverse it. And then I saw a lot of different projects that are showing that we can reverse this. We can create lush and wonderful, beautiful pieces of land from deserted or desertified areas. And that was such a concrete example of how we, with the right vision, can change the world, literally, can make something that is dead, that is deprived of everything, that we can make such a thing back into paradise, that we can recreate paradise on earth. So I decided to make it my life mission to just do that, to first of all inspire people that it is possible, and then secondly to also just go out and do it. And with the inspirational part, I do it writing books, making documentaries, giving talks or keynotes. And then the practical side is that with our landscape architect company, Commensalist, we just go and design the best possible ecosystems that are good for nature, but are also good for humans because they provide food.
That's absolutely fantastic and inspiring to hear about the work you do in the on the landscaping side. I suppose.
Well, thank you very much.
I suppose, as we're saying at the beginning, it's about doing little things, because people might think, oh, well, you just do some landscaping. What good does that do? But actually, if you think about it, when it connects into the wider issues in the world, as you say, it's very, very, very important what the work that you're doing. I mean, yes. I don't think many people, for example, would know that the Sahara Desert was actually previously a place where there was a thriving ecosystem which provided food, for example. So it's good to know that. And then as you do connect it back to the landscaping. I guess one of the questions we would have around Newism, because we want to think about how we build on best practices just now, like what you're doing, and create it into a system. One of the challenges we have is if we do things as individuals constructively, we do create change, but then it's not necessarily connected up. So for example, you might have your landscaping, but then an urban planner comes along and bulldozes everything out of the way.
happens all the time.
Yes, you see, that's the challenge. So how do we create this into a system change, so that it's not all of us as individuals doing things, which is positive and constructive? How do we change this up into a system change to stop the bulldozers coming, because no one in their right mind would bring the bulldozer?
Yes. Well, I think that has to do with a connection to nature. In our Western society, we are taken out of our natural ecosystem and we're put in boxes. Our boxes are put on each other. London is a very nice example. You go out of your box and then you're on a concrete slab. You have to get into a very noisy car or subways to go to another place. You can take the bike. I tried to do it. I barely survived in London, bicycling through the city. And then we go to schools. As children, we sit in schools. I don't know how it's in the UK, but it's probably also maybe 20 years of your life. It's 16 to 20 years of your life that you're in school, and there are also boxes. There are not many schools with trees, with grass, with natural elements. So we are really just taken out of our ecosystem, so we lost connection with it. There is even a name for it. I think it's called nature deficit disorder, of people that just are so aloof of nature that that it's almost a kind of disorder, because it creates a lot of problems. There are countless of studies that when people or children with ADHD, attention deficit disorder, or other problems, that they fade away the moment they go into an outdoor classroom, they go into nature. It maybe sounds a little bit flower power-ish, but it's just hard evidence that when we are in nature, we come to ourselves and we connect to nature, but also to ourselves. And if you're connected to yourself, then it's much harder to destroy beautiful things. If you are in a noisy city with thousands of inputs, people harassing you, then it's much easier to take your bulldozer and just say, oh, the hell with it. If you're more connected with yourself, then you won't do such a thing.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I think you're probably right. And that's another expression. I'm learning things today. I've never heard of the nature deficit disorder, but it actually seems really logical what you're saying. But it's almost, again, how do we advance in society? Because I remember, I often tell this story. Alex will have heard this a number of times. You know, years ago, I was in the mountains of Bolivia, and the nature around was stunning and beautiful. And we met these farmers there, and we were talking to them about sustainable farming and fair trade. And I remember they welcomed us in the square of their village, and they put a big table out, and we ate this lovely food, actually. Real, you know, from the ground, from the trees.
They're making me hungry.
But everybody was so welcoming, and everybody you could say was happy. The children were laughing and running around, and there was just happiness, a contentment amongst the people. But the children didn't have any shoes, and they didn't have a school. And their life expectancy for some of the farmers, particularly if the crops failed, was about 50.
Wow.
So I'm you know, the challenge is, do you kind of say, hey, let's open the school, and let's open some roads, and let's do some other things, but in the process, do you destroy their happiness? Because they were genuine, believe me, they were genuinely happy.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, back to urban society in Western countries, sometimes, you know, now we're talking about all sorts of mental health challenges. The way we live is causing us, you know, real unhappiness, actually.
Exactly.
So how do we get the balance then between, you know, allowing people to be in school and live longer and have shoes, at the same time as, retaining that connection and happiness with nature? How do we do that?
Yeah, well, I think it's not an off question that or people have to live without shoes and without schools, but be happy, or have all the technical advancements and monetary funds as necessary. I think both can go hand in hand. There is no reason let me put it differently. We have all the ingredients right here, right now, to create this society. With just tweaking a few things, making a few systemic changes, all the ingredients are here. We just have to put in the right mix. It's as you said, about systemic change, and a lot of this starts in schools. For example, there are a lot of schools who have outdoor classes. For example, in Belgium, there are schools where children are just year-round outside. Those children never get sick. They are super healthy, but they do get driven home by their parents' Mercedes, for example, to give an extreme example. So I think those two can really go hand in hand, but it's always up to some people putting in front of other people. And that's the inspirational part, really, the poster of, wow, this is possible. Look at this example in Finland, where people are doing amazing things in schools. Look at this example here in this kind of school. Showing these posters to people, inspire people, and then it's just a matter of making sure that it gets implemented. And that, of course, has to go through all the red tapes. And preferably, it's the politicians change the rules so to make this possible, because politicians are our employees, they're the employees of the citizens, but we as citizens have to first agree on this kind of poster, this ideal world, or this small part of the world, so we can go and just do it.
Okay, that's interesting. So in a sense, what you're saying is that this really comes from the bottom up. So in what the work you're doing, for example, in the landscaping, people should take notice of that and replicate it or work in partnership with you, understand the impact you're making and the points you're making in your books and your talks about it.
Exactly.
But then it's also your good example with the school. It's a question of people saying what the outcomes are. So when you say that in that school who were working outside, they are healthier, that's the story you need to say. You need to say to the other schools, by the way, all these children are much healthier. Their attainment levels are much higher because they're working outside. And that's the message you need to get through. And sometimes I think at the moment, one of the challenges is we work in our little atomized area, and we don't look outwards. So, and we don't hear the other things that are happening. Do you think that's right? Or do you think people are starting to listen and go, oh, hey, we can do this?
No, I think you're definitely right, what you were saying. And what one politician once said to me, really literally, Louis, we as a politician, we don't change things. We do not take initiatives. We look at what's happening, what nice initiatives are there, what initiatives have traction and get people interested. And then we as politicians simply go and support those things or try to copy it. Or try to implement it. And that was really shocking, because when I was small, I thought, okay, if I wanted to change the world, I have to become a politician because they are in power. And so with this notion, I went to some politicians and talked to them and said, oh, we can do this, 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 and this. So but we do not do things. You have to do things. And then I will say, okay, you're doing a great thing, now I will support you. So that was really a big mind shift for me, to see that it's up to us. And as you're saying, are people listening? I think that people have a very hard time to listen, because we have, I'm not sure how much, but I think it's in the millions of inputs of messages coming to us from all kind of apparatuses. For example, if you check your mails, if you check your cell phone, your smartphone, if you walk the street and see banners of advertisements, if you go, doesn't matter where you go, you get bombarded by messages. So it's very hard, if you want to create another message and send another message, it's very hard to reach people, because then royalty gets divorced, and then everybody's watching what's happening in the royal house, or another fait divers is happening. People are looking to that, or there is a pandemic, or there's a war which dominates the news, and everybody is in this kind of psychosis of this war or of this pandemic, and all their mental energy is just going to this big problem, because they see it four hours a day on every news stand, wherever they go, with whoever they talk, it's all about this subject. So it's all about people like you and me, who have an inspiring thing they are doing, to just talk about it, to be this other one message in this vast amount of millions of messages. So maybe one message in this vast amount won't get noticed, but if there are 10 messages, or maybe 100 messages, or maybe even 100,000 messages of people like you and me sending this message, then people will notice us. But it's so important to make noise, to make positive noise.
Yes, I think I would agree with you, and it's another whole, we could do another whole podcast on the media and the messaging and marketing. But you're so right. I do agree with you. There are so many things now that hit you from the moment you get out of bed in the morning. There's so many things hitting you. And I think your brain can only, even if you've got a big brain, I think your brain can only take so much. It's exactly. Kind of overloads and therefore doesn't get the messaging at all. So I think you're absolutely right. I think, and I would agree with you that the people in this wider, if you want to call it movement, or people who believe in, you know, longer term sustainability for the world, you know, mm-hmm. we have to be together, support one another, share messages, yes. As best we can in the most efficient way, I think. Yeah. And people are talking about that because I think there's more of a discussion now about system change. So like mm-hmm. we're talking about the newism, okay. In the meantime, though, it is about, I think, us inspiring one another and then taking lead positions. So back to the story about the outdoor school, you see the message there would be children are in a better place as a result. And that message needs to come out from the leader of that school, whoever's taken that initiative. Mm-hmm. To go to other schools everywhere. Hey,
yeah.
And I wouldn't be saying necessarily start, it's better for nature or the world. Just for example, have your children outside. I'd simply be saying the first message is the children's attainment is much better if they're taught outside. That's the way it would start. Because that's where the head teachers are in terms of the pressure they're under to deliver whatever they have to deliver.
Yeah.
So it's a question of kind of thinking about that and sharing. And then, as we said right at the beginning of this conversation, if then people kind of go, okay, well, I could do that. I could take some children outside for the lessons today. Then that's how you create a wave of change, I think.
Exactly. And it starts so small. And one of the biggest obstacles for this change is that we are all perfectionists. We are trained that if you make a mistake, people do not want to make mistakes, because if you make a mistake, then you are criticized, and nobody wants to be criticized. We all have this childhood traumas of this one teacher that says, oh, what you did was really bad and almost punished you, and then you have had those tears, and then you said, okay, I'm only going to do things that are perfect now, so nobody can criticize me ever again. Well, this is the beginning of the apocalypse. This is the beginning of the end. Because if there are a billion people watching this message, and this billion people all get inspired and say, oh, yes, wow, now I'm inspired to do something too. But they go out and say, okay, what can I do in my profession with my skills and my surrounding? And then, okay, those 1 billion people really have the intention of doing it. And then they start thinking, okay, but I'm going to do this, for example, but it has to be perfect. Okay, so how am I going to do this perfect? Okay, first I have to go to follow these classes to know how to, for example, plant trees, because how to plant a tree. And then, okay, what kind of trees? Then you have to find the right suppliers of these trees, and then but they are not perfect too, and then we all get wound up in our own heads of being so perfect, and then we end up with analysis paralysis. We get paralyzed because we want to be so perfect, and the 1 billion people who will, for example, be influenced by us here today will maybe start by doing things in 5 years, because in 5 years they will have perfected their idea to change the world, but in 5 years it might be too late. And this is why I want to tell people a very simple message: do or die. And I do not literally mean die, but just do it right now. Even if you're still naive, you can do so much by just starting today. You do not have to be perfect, but it's better that we, with millions of people, all do small, tiny steps that are imperfect than a couple of people that are really so good or so perfect that then are going to try to change the world. But that's one of the most important things. Just do it right now. Stop being a perfectionist. That's what's keeping us down.
Yeah, I think I absolutely agree with you. It's about energizing people, and so they understand to do things, to join in, and just to do things and to try to do things, and it doesn't matter if it's approximately not right. I do believe in what you're saying, and connected with that is how we're all atomized now. I would call atomized, so it's all these algorithms. So we have to be, you can't be, you know, a footballer and a social entrepreneur and a scientist and a whatever. You have to be one or the other, blah blah blah, and so you get pushed into boxes, and then once you're into that box, you are paralyzed, if you like, in a sense, because you think you can't do other things when you're actually quite
exactly
capable of doing other things which might appear not to fit in your CV, in your CV, if you like. So I think that's another issue as well, actually. And what's happening is with these, because it's global, and as we said before, you get these kind of, everything has what I call zeros at the end of it. It's not like 5 or 6 people, it's 5 or 6,000 or 5 or 600,000. And then that's what makes you also kind of go, oh, I can't do anything.
Yeah.
But I think for younger people, such, you know, it's now kind of obvious that we need to stop talking about the doom and gloom of the future of the planet. Actually, we have to do something. It's not a question of like, maybe we should do it. We have to do something of it. Maybe for the older generation, my generation, we are not going to see the full effects of things if we don't change, but future generation as well. So there's an imperative. I think there's an understanding about that, which gives me positive hope for the future. I don't know whether you're picking that up as well, that younger people get this much more.
Well, I think they're more in touch with the possibility of change. They're still learning, and they still have space in their minds. Their cup isn't full yet, but people who are just living in the rat race, they have their mortgages to pay, they have a lot of luxuries they do not want to miss, and I can totally relate with that. It's nice if you have this beautiful car or this beautiful house that you want to keep it, but we are so occupied as grown-ups with daily life that we do not have the mental space to do it. And then especially if you have children, then you have to so many other responsibilities to think about. Children, they or youngsters, they still can go out and take their backpack and go backpacking in Thailand, for example. How many people from 40 years do you know that say, oh, I'm just going to go and backpack in Thailand for 6 months? And that's just a pleasure. But the same thing you can say about activism or doing something world changing. The funny thing is that it's mostly, so I'm surrounded by a lot of people who are change makers. And I see two profiles, or maybe three profiles. Ones are youngsters who have nothing to lose and just say, well, Darn with it. If we do not do anything, we will do not have a future. If, for example, people from Extinction Rebellion or from Children for Climate or Youngsters for Climate, we have all these kinds of movements, and they have nothing to lose, and they just say, okay, if we do not do it, we will all be doomed. Then you have another group of people who are entrepreneurs that say, and they can be social entrepreneurs or just entrepreneurs, and then they incorporate this activism in their work. They just go and start a company, for example. Okay, I'm gonna start a company, for example, my example, that designs outdoor spaces, that designs food forests. I know another guy who started with just a campaign to stop using bottled water, but drink water from the tap. And it started as a campaign, but now he sells these machines that filter tap water and make sparkling water and normal water out of them and removes all kind of things you do not want in your water. So he starts a business out of it. So now he can keep on doing it, and he finances his activism, which is a beautiful way to make change lasting. And then the third group are people who suffer, people who have a burnout, people who in one kind of another way also do not have anything to lose, because they didn't lose their job, but they had a burnout, had to stop their job. Mostly it's for a year they have this burnout, or have a family member who is ill or has just died, so they are in a kind of crisis situation, so they have this free space to think, and then you see those people say, okay, what am I doing in this world? I'm for example, in the heart of London, I'm working in this newspaper, and am I really making a difference? Oh, how can I make a difference? And then they connect with people who are making a difference, for example, sustainable farming, and they go and help on this farm, and they say, wow, this is what has to be done. So you have the youngsters, the entrepreneurs, and then the people who are in a crisis situation, but people who are locked in their job and change. There are, of course, a lot of people doing it too, but their change mostly isn't that profound.
That's fantastic and inspiring. And obviously what you're talking about is kind of the different levels of activism. People just be active or make a noise. Other people can be entrepreneurial, make a living out of their activism and so on. But it's all about people doing things. And this is what we want to kind of get to as a point, I think. But I think we you and I, anyway, at least could go on talking all day, and we have to kind of finish now. So okay. I'm very grateful for you talking to you. It's fabulous talking to you, actually. And
good pleasure.
You know, in terms of what Newism wants to do, this is, you know, where we're going, thinking about these things, how we create new systems. But I'll hand back to Alex now. And thank you very much for your time today.
Nice to meet you, Mel.
Yeah, and you.
Louis, Mel said he could have gone on talking to you all day, and I could absolutely have gone on listening to your conversation all day. It's such a...
Thank you.
It's such an honour and a pleasure to hear someone who's kind of active and positive and believes that change can happen and knows how to make it happen. And I really kind of set me up for the day and the week and made me act. So thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and your insights with us. We've heard about how you, you know, the importance of connection with nature, of acting now, you know, for change, for not allowing perfectionism to get in the way. And that really resonated with me with what you were saying about, you know, is that the right type of tree to plant? Absolutely. You almost like you were seeing into my mind, you know. And, you know, the power of individuals to drive big systemic change and so much more. I really feel like I've learned a lot. I'm sure Mel feels the same, and our listeners will as well. And just the world's very lucky to have young leaders like you driving change. So, thank God. Well,
thank you so much.
I'll give you the last word. So if you could share with us I suppose summarizing what you just said, your manifesto for a better future, just in a few sentences.
Well, the manifesto of a better future is just, maybe a little challenge for people who are listening to this. And it is, if you wake up in the morning, why do you wake up? Why? What are you going to do? What is the reason you are doing what you're doing? And it's normal that you do not know this answer the second I ask this question, or maybe even the next day. But try to think about it, or maybe better, try to feel this. Try to feel what really gets you up in the morning. Try to look at your past, what's like the red thread throughout your story, and try to formulate this for yourself. And then it's really easy that if you have to make decisions in life, then you can just ask, okay. For example, my personal reason why I wake up in the morning is to inspire people and make them sure that they know that they can make a difference. So everything I do, I'm asking myself, okay, is this part of my mission? If I do this action or this action, does it resonate with this mission, this why of why I wake up? And then it's life becomes much easier. And you also get so much more energy because then you know what you are doing. And if you do not know what you are doing, what's your life about then? If you do not know what you're doing, then you just live, or maybe you are being lived. And that's maybe a question you want to ask yourself. Do you want to live or do you want to be lived? And knowing why you do things puts you in an active role, and also gives you a kind of responsibility of, you know, what you are doing here, why you came to this planet. Now go for it and just do it. Be unperfect.
I think that is an incredibly important and powerful message. And I will certainly take that with me into the rest of the day and over the weekend. So
nice.
Thank you very, very much. That's been such a great episode, and we can't wait to share it. So thank you very much, Louis. Thank you.
With pleasure, Alexandra. See you later, and good luck with the new ism.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the New Ism Podcast. We hope you enjoyed hearing from Louis and learning about the amazing change he is leading as much as we did. Please do tweet us on @NewismTalks to let us know your thoughts, and rate and review us in the Apple Podcast app. We'll be back next week with another fascinating conversation. Please join us then.